everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. WBAI 99.5 FM. A festival of our own right here at WBAI. Bringing you such thoughtful things to think about, you know. Show's called The Positive Mind, and it's called The Positive Mind because my idea is that if you understand things, you become a kinder, more loving person. You become a positive influence in the world instead of a negative influence in the world. And I can understand people being a negative influence because we learned that it takes everybody in the community to move forward, the positive ones and the negative ones. There's always somebody who's moving ahead and other people who are dragging behind. There are people who don't know anything, and then there are the people who know a lot. And it isn't that all of life should be that everybody knows a lot, but at least there should be a balance. At least knowledge should be allowed to a strong percentage of the community. And here we talk about the knowledge of the human mind. Yes, the human mind. And where does a human get more stupid than in love? Yep. It's the place, the mating game, the love game. The experience of love seems to be what people live for. Now, you may say, no, you live for work. You live for mankind. You live for humankind. You live for, well, that's love in a way. But today we're going to focus on the love-hate relationship. Yes, the relationship between people you love and hate almost at the same times, from time to time. Such a combination of passions. Love and hate. It's amazing. Young boy once told me he caught his mom and pop. He was peeking at his mother and father having sex. And he was very, very young, like 3. And he thought mommy was beating up, daddy was beating up mommy. He thought he was beating her because she was yelling. And he was fighting. He said, Mommy, Daddy, don't hurt Mommy, is the way he felt. And they were expressing love and passion. And the son was seeing hate. Sex very often looks like an aggressive act. You know, it looks like, how can we call that love? It's very often very impactful. You know, it takes a lot of energy. So how can love and hate be so present in the same person? And this we're going to discuss today. Because you could think about it with any number of relationships. You could have a love-hate for your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend. Sigurd. That's a significant other. Sigurd. You could have a love-hate relationship with your parents. You have a love-hate relationship with your children, with your brothers, your sisters, your co-workers, your best friends. People can have a best friend that they have a love-hate relationship with. Funny thing, though, you know, friends are the people with whom you have the least love-hate relationship. Why is that? Because friends you could leave. There's not a blood tie. You drop your friend when you get to hating them. You know what I mean? You just dump them. That's it. Forget to call them back. Sorry, I was busy. I'll get back to you as soon as I get over this thing I'm doing. You just get rid of them. Lovers, family, much harder to do that. The blood tie is always there, you know, that feeling of being connected. But that brings us to the question of love itself. What is love? Well, it's a word that's tossed about an awful lot, and I'm not going to say that I have one definition that's better than everybody else's definition. But one thing I know about love for sure is it's a feeling of attachment, a feeling of connectedness. You love someone, you feel special around them. In fact, we may say that love is a feeling that comes as a result of you feeling the most like the natural, real you around somebody else. So you could say, I love you when, I love myself when I'm around you. And that's that feeling. I feel great when I love you, when I'm seeing you, when I'm with you, when I'm making love with you, when I'm next to you, holding you, touching you. I feel so involved, so connected, not only with you, but myself. I become an instrument I love, you know? I become a being that I love being. So love may be not so much about the object, but love could be about yourself when you're with this person, you know? Makes sense. Think about it. Think about the people you've loved. How spectacular it was. Like when you're early in love, right? Early stage. You go to work, you do your work, you're waiting for your day. At the end of the day, you know you're seeing the person you love. And life changes the minute you get together with them. The minute they touch you, the minute they hold you, the minute they look at you, you get this feeling, I am connected. It's such an amazing feeling. Sometimes it only happens during sex. Sometimes people have this, they're very distant from each other, but then when they have sex, they get this close feeling. Other times you have it almost all the time. Just the smell of the person, the fragrance of the person, can give you this love feeling. So, love itself is a feeling where you want to touch someone, nurture them, hold them, take care of them. You care about them as a separate being. Maybe. Or maybe you care about the way they make you feel. You care how they enhance you. You know, you really don't care about them, but you care about how and what they do for you. That's all right. If you call it love, that's love. I am not going to be one of these people who sit here and say, no, that's not real love. Shrinks like to do that, you know, they like to become the authorities on love. They like to go around telling people, this is real love, this is not real love. But forget it. We're no authorities. Now, let's look at hate. If love is the feeling that you love yourself when you're around another person, you love the way you feel, get that? See, when you love someone and you get near them or you think about them, you feel wonderful inside you. See? You get aroused on every level when you think of this person. That's love. Or we'll call it love. Now, that's one feeling. What is hate? Well, hate is the diametric opposite of that. Hate is a feeling where you want to destroy that person, where you feel rage at this person. In fact, hate is a combination of rage and powerlessness. Hate is a feeling because you make me feel so alone. You, who I thought I loved so much, have violated my love, and now I hate you. Think about how many infidelities there are in life, people who are who cheat on their husbands and wives. I don't even like the word cheat, but people who go off with their husbands, other mates, right? And then you find out about it. I hate you for that. I loved you 5 minutes ago, but I hate you for this. And now I have replaced the feeling of love with this venomous feeling of hatred. Why? I hate you because I was feeling good inside myself in thinking about my connection to you. I felt so safe in this world. And then you proved to me I'm not so safe. Then you broke my illusion of who you were. And it turned this love to such a horrible feeling that I couldn't get away from you fast enough. And all I could feel is this hatred on one level. On another level, I am so dependent on you and need you that I can't leave you. I love you, hate you. And it's according to which one dominates at the moment. But you know, in most people who have long-term relationships, there's always a little bit of both. It may be a 2% hate and a 98% love. And then that could change. It could be 50-50, 40-60, 30-75. Gotcha. All right. So think about your parents. You hate your parents sometimes. When do you hate your parents? You hate your parents when they're being a pain in the butt. You hate your parents when they're telling you who you should be. You hate your parents when you are not feeling like you are part of a family where somebody loves you. See, you love your parents. When you're silent with them, you go out with them, you have dinner with them, you go to Christmas together. You and your parents, you feel great with them. But when they do something that you don't like, you hate them. Because they're proving to you that they really don't love you all that much. When they do something selfish, when they nag you about why you don't have children, when they tell you how to live, when they tell you how to bring up your children, when they criticize you, you can hate them. On some level, you love them, you're connected, and you can hate them. You can just say, ugh, can't stand it. You can love, hate your children. Your children, who you spend all your life helping to bring up, right? And then they get to a certain point where they've got to be independent. And they are proving to you that they are no longer connected to you. Every child's job in life is to get to a point where they could be without their parents. So every child must rebel. They must stand up on their own and turn their back on you. They must turn against your values in order for them to mature, you know. So then they fight with you, and they turn their back on you, and they discard your values, and you look at them and you say, how could you do this, you miserable creature, child you? But that's growing up. They become themselves. But you could hate them during that time. You could hate your own children. Hate your brother or sister if they betray you. If you think that they were just on your side and you find out they said something bad about you, or they talked to your parents about something you confided in them in. The love-hate relationship is what we're talking about, and we're going to be talking about this today with you. Yes, I want you to be calling in, because I want to hear a couple of things from you. Number one, I want to know what you think love is. And number two, I want you to tell me your own stories about your love-hate relationships and how they could confuse you. And sometimes love and hate go together, and you add them together, and they equal passion. Sometimes you can have a buildup of passion around hatred because you kind of need something to raise the temperature in the room. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I was listening to something recently, and I wanted you to share it with me. It's kind of real interesting. Let's see if we can do this properly. Here's a little piece of Shirley Bassey. Yeah, now listen to this. See if you ever felt this way.
I never, never, never want to be in love with anyone but you. You make me laugh, you make me cry, you make me live, you make me die for you. You make me sing, you make me sad, you make me glad, you make me mad for you. Never, never, never want to be in love with anyone but you. I love you, hate you, but I want you till the world stops turning. For whatever you do, I never, never, never want to be in love with anyone. You.
there's a stimulant for you, huh, friends? I love you, hate you, love you, hate you. I never want to be in love with anyone but you, and gosh almighty, it's confusing, isn't it? This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. What do? Around here? Well, I'm a mental health technician. Psychodetective. I work here with a group of people who are all psychotherapists. And we help people around discovering themselves, learning about themselves. Why do we do that? Most people come to us after they've had a failed relationship. Because in a failed relationship, one thing happens. You get tossed on yourself. You thought you were connected. You get yourself lost in another relationship. And then all of a sudden, that thing blows up. And there you are. Tossed back on yourself. Now you are you again. Now you are stuck with you all over again. And you don't like what you see. You loved wrong. You loved too much. You loved too little. You know. Jesus, you felt like a person could devour you. Or you could devour the other person at one point, and then at another point you just can't stand them and you don't want to be around them. And you hate them. So, this is confusing, huh? So what we do is we try to make it a little more understandable to you. And one of the ways we're going to do that is by taking your phone calls today. 212-209-2900 is the number here at WBAI. We've had less and less time available for callers to take, to get on air because we've been presenting you with some really important, great, fantastic stuff. A woman walked in the studio a little while back. She was passing by. And she was talking about some of the programs that Roberta Atti and I have been doing on human sexuality. And she looked at me in such a lovely way. Maria was her name, that's right. And she said, and she's somebody who must be in her 60s or something like that, 50s, 60s. And she said, you know, I wish my family could learn this stuff. Because it seems to be where all their confusions are. So it's really a terrific piece of, we love doing it, but we don't have too much of a chance since we're presenting so much material to you to take you callers, and let's hear from you. So today, I want to focus a lot of time on taking your calls. 212-209-2900, love, hate. Let's take a call. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. This is Penelope in Manhattan.
Hello, Penelope.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you. This is just right on my mind because I just broke up with somebody that was exactly like that the end of May because it was just, it started, the relationship deteriorated to a very nasty level. And I
tell me, how nasty did it get? How did it deteriorate to nastiness?
He just started accusing me of spending his money or taking down to the point of taking his cigarettes or even coming over just for a light for a cigarette. But anyway, he also...
Wait. I want to understand that. Give me that detail again. began distrusting you.
He began distrusting me because I used to drink with him and I stopped drinking.
That's trouble.
Yeah, we were both kind of in the miasma of drunkenness. And then when I stopped and I got on my feet and I was drifting away, he got very abusive and very tight. He was used to be taking me out. And then everything was about bills. And then he slapped me again. He went out with my girlfriend and had sex with her. So it was pretty...
painful.
Yeah.
I hear Penelope. It ripped your soul apart. You know, it's that feeling that you have somebody that you feel connected to. And little by little, the glue of that relationship had a lot to do with the alcohol that you shared.
Yeah.
You know, and then he sees you moving away, and in a way, you know, the alcohol takes over, and you now have a relationship with the alcohol, not with the person anymore. And that
Can you say that part again? I didn't get that.
You have a relationship with a man. If you drink heavily and he drinks heavily, the two of you have a relationship with each other as a total being, you and your drinking and him with his drinking as two entities.
Yeah.
But when you take away your drinking, then he's no longer relating to the person he knows.
Oh.
So the drinking in him comes up.
Oh,
the addiction in him comes up, and the addiction tries to force you, tries to blame you for no longer being who you are. He used to feel safe with you. He found somebody he could drink and smoke with.
Right.
And that felt great to him. And then all of a sudden, you go up and you decide that you don't want to be drinking and smoking so much. He feels betrayed in a way and doesn't know it because his feeling of safety inside was destroyed. But of course, that feeling was also destroying you.
Oh, awful, yeah. And it just becomes so abusive that I just said, I can't take these insults. He didn't think it was an insult.
Yeah.
He now, through my so-called girlfriend, who sometimes I've had to ease off with her because it was almost the same with her because she was drinking too.
Uh-huh.
We were all big drinking buddies. And she was starting then to become periodic, but she's still a binger. And occasionally I just drifted away from her, too, and she's becoming nasty. It's another pattern. So she's tied up with him, and they both slander and talk these ridiculous things about me. She says, well, I want to go to Puerto Rico, too, because you took Penny, you know, Penelope or Penny, you know, or whatever. She doesn't say it exactly like that, but she started to say things that sounded like, well, you know, I feel very sabotaged. I only talked to her when she was taking his dogs out for a walk. And one dog died, and I had a hard time leaving
Penelope.
Him. What?
Penelope.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's you're heartbroken.
Yeah.
You're heartbroken because a new you. A new you has tried to come out and got pushed away and pushed down and hurt. It's so hard, but this is the chance. This is the opportunity where you reshape yourself, you know?
Yeah.
And the pain is going to be valuable if you could use it to explore yourself. Are you in any kind of therapy or talking to any kind of counselor at this point?
Yes. She almost yelled hallelujah when I said I cut off from him because I was forgiving him and going back. He would be sweet one day. I mean, exactly what you said about love, hate. Sweet one day, nasty the next. Sweet one day, nasty the next.
Yeah.
So it took me a long time to say more nasty than sweet. And more nasty than sweet. And
yeah, but I guess you were somebody who most of your life didn't think that much of yourself, so you just took as much as you could. Then you started thinking more of yourself and decided to unmedicate yourself.
Yeah.
It's tough.
At first it was a big relief because I've been doing so much for myself since I left him, but then the residue of the time and the unappreciation, occasionally it comes to me and I feel lonely and
yeah.
I think I don't want to ever be abused like that again. What
nice,
happened to
nice
me for those 8 years?
Right?
Was I dense?
Yeah, you were coming out. You were growing up. Thanks for calling in, Penelope.
Thank you so much, Armand.
My pleasure.
All right, bless you.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's no unique story, even though it does belong to Penelope herself. It's the way it is. I love you, hate you, love you, hate you. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Jeannie.
Hi, Jeannie. Could you get down your radio? Turn it all the way off.
I'm trying to. How about that? Is that better?
Is it all the way off?
Yes, it is.
It's perfect.
Wow, I can't believe I got through. This is Jeannie calling from Westchester.
Hi, Jeannie.
And, well, I've had
many
broken
hearts. Let me ask you one thing, Jeannie. Are you sure the radio's off?
Oh, you know, I thought so. Yeah, how about that? Is that better?
That is much better.
Okay, sorry.
Thank you, because if the radio's on, what happens is we get an echo feedback that eventually becomes hard to hear, and I should tell that to anybody who calls in today.
Yeah, I know that, but my button was weird, but thank you.
My button's weird, too. So.
Well, I've had many broken hearts, actually,
mm-hmm.
and I have one, a big one right now.
Another one.
Yeah, but you know, the strange thing is that every time it happens, it's like, because I've been in therapy and a lot of soul journey, and it's through all of the broken pieces, it's bringing me back home. And
that's great. So how do you describe home?
Oh, well, home first was the Holocaust. And it was a very painful experience. And that's probably why I avoided it. But I need to, in order to get to my true home, which is a peaceful, loving place,
mm-hmm.
I have to go through all the pain again.
Mm-hmm.
And I never knew that the joy existed.
So you used to go into relationships where you would feel this feeling of home, of belonging with a person.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd have this mate, and then this mate in some way would prove to you that your home was really built on twigs, that this home really wasn't a home.
Right.
And so then, when it would break up,
mm-hmm.
you're tossed back on your homeless shelter.
Exactly.
But you don't have a home there. So what you started building over the time is you started building a foundation for yourself to have your own home. So even though you end the relationship and you feel the pain of it, you're falling back on a more secure person.
Which is myself?
Which is yourself.
Yeah.
You remind me of something really important, and I wish everybody who has a pencil handy would write this down. Everybody who has a pencil or pen, would you do me a favor, pick it up right now? And I want you to write these words down. Home
mm-hmm.
is a feeling, not a place.
Mm.
It's always a good thing to have around because we need to feel this feeling of home. There needs to be a place where we come back to, where
yeah.
we can land, you know?
And the funny thing is about the relationships, they were so much a composite of my mother and my father who died, but they were exactly the same. It was uncanny.
Well, you know, what we do is we pick people who are like, who represent the past so that we can develop mastery over it, you see?
Uh-huh.
When you were a kid, you were powerless with your parents.
Yeah. Very, very, very much so.
But by choosing people who represent the same kind of characteristics, you
uh-huh.
eventually bring yourself to a point where you become more powerful over that very same stuff.
Yeah. You know, that's like a miracle to me, but it's true. I never thought that was possible, but that is what it is.
So when did you break up this last relationship?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. So do you have Band-Aids in your closet?
What? Say that again?
You have Band-Aids in your house.
Yeah, I've got a lot of them.
You got a lot of Band-Aids? Go get a Band-Aid.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to stay on the phone here with you. Go get a Band-Aid. I'm going to wait.
Okay.
Go get one.
Okay.
And any of you who are sitting out there who have a Band-Aid handy, go grab a Band-Aid.
Okay, let me see.
Okay, Jeannie's going to get a Band-Aid. Jeannie, have a Band-Aid?
I got a Band-Aid.
Would you open it up?
Okay.
Jeannie.
Uh-huh.
Are you in a private place?
Yes.
Yeah, you're in your home.
Uh-huh.
Put the Band-Aid on your heart.
Oh.
Do it right now. Put it there.
Okay.
Got one? Got it? Put your hand over it. Doesn't that feel good?
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate your show.
Sure, thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, providing you Band-Aids for the heart. Hey, I will be back with you in just a couple of minutes, my friends. We'll be right back.
This is Lawrence Block, and you're listening to WBAI in New York City. Listener supported and non-commercial.
Bring up your music now.
Hope you're bopping by now, my friends. Regina Carter. Cut that off a lot sooner, but I tell you, friends, Regina Carter, the feeling, you know, listen to that feeling in there, the screaming, I want to talk to you, and it's a yelling and dance and putting it all together. That's the way love feels. There's a love song. I mean, it could be a violin concerto. It could be Regina Carter doing jazz violin. It could be Mozart. It could be Beethoven. It could be any of your favorite Latin music. It could be anything. It could be Jacques Brel. But the way it feels, you know, love is a feeling. And the rage and the frustration that you feel in your relationships when that person makes you feel unsafe, it is brutal. Think about jealousy. How's that for love hate? Right? You know what jealousy is? Jealousy is love-hate. Now, think about that. You feel jealous. I mean, when you feel you got your man or you got your woman, and they're with somebody else, and you feel this intense jealousy, how could you be around that person? How could you be with that person? Whether or not they're fooling around or not, you get insanely jealous. And you feel this, but not insanely. I don't mean you're crazy to be jealous, but that's what jealousy is. It's a rage, a powerlessness. It's a love-hate. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, I think it's me.
It is you. I think it's me, too.
Hi, Armand. Well, everything you're saying is so on the money. Sometimes I think my biggest love-hate relationship is with me, and also, I don't know if there's something wrong with me if I can't love. I think I've wanted a relationship more than ever, and I've never really had any type of lasting relationship in my entire life. I tend to be termed a free spirit a lot and footloose and fancy free, but I do want to be with someone that I love. And been pretty down on myself the last several years after a relationship that wasn't all that close broke up.
Down on yourself in, ever since that one. So that means at that time, that relationship was filling a very important spot for you. When did this happen?
This is totally bizarre. I mean, this is like 5.5 years ago. I'm finally over it.
Okay, but 5.5 years ago, you met somebody and you had this relationship for how long? 6 months?
We knew each other for several years. It was over a period of 3 years, but he lived in another country and was married.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't see each other that much. And when we did, it was intense, but there was lots of jealousy and lots of times of not hearing anything. And, oh boy, this is going to sound so weird, and I'm being so truthful. Even seeing psychics to try to get information as far as what would happen and what was going on in his head.
Mm-hmm. So there you were in a relationship. You've always had difficulty forming a long-term relationship because you've always wanted to have an exit. You feel like a free spirit. You feel like you don't want to be trapped. You don't like being in pain. Pain is the difficulty for you. Pain is the thing you're avoiding. You go from relationship to relationship, and when a relationship doesn't work, you kind of ease yourself out of it, right?
Well, almost. I don't go... Actually, no, I usually am not in relationship.
You mean you don't even go on dates?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. How do you avoid them?
No one's knocking down my door.
Because you're not putting out a signal that you want anybody to come in through your archway.
Perhaps so.
You know, you got a door, but, you know, and sometimes there's a signal out there. When you're open to meeting somebody, there's an openness that goes out there. But you sound like you're somebody who's had a lot of trouble in childhood, like, by trusting, you know, do you...
I guess I have. I mean, I was adopted, and I was born prematurely after my mother fell down steps. So I suppose just I equate a lot by maybe not having initial bonding because I was in an incubator and then adopted. And I suppose there were issues with my adopted parents as well. And
so you never really felt like you belonged to anything?
Well, Yeah.
You know, that's the thing about a lot of men. If you go to men, you think about men and their relationships. You could always ask them about if they ever belonged to anything. Men tend to feel more often than women. I'm sorry for this characterization, but I think it's true. That they don't belong to anything. You know, and they don't belong. By belong, I mean they don't feel truly connected. Because men are, at a very early age, cast out. To go do their own thing, and they don't feel connected. I mean, this is part of the program.
Yeah.
Women, I think, on the other hand, and this may not, of course, it's not true of all, they tend to feel more connected. Now, here's the thing that happens when you don't feel connected, like you.
Mm-hmm.
Adoption, right? Your mom had fallen down the stairs, and, you know, the whole thing, an incubator. You don't feel connected. So the real question is, how do you get connected? How do you get it? How do you make a relationship happen? How do you open this flow between you and another person that's going to work? That's a real question. What's your name, by the way?
Oh, my name is Helena.
Helena. So, Helena, let me ask you, have you ever had a relationship with a girlfriend, a boyfriend, a friend that has been a long-term relationship?
You know... Not much. A little bit in high school, in grammar school, my friends, and then early high school we moved, and then that really made things. That was almost the kiss of death, and I haven't had many long-term relationships since.
All right. So, you know, Roberta Atti has a theory about what's called the refugee syndrome.
Yeah.
Have you heard that work?
A little bit. I didn't listen to all the shows on it, but it did seem to resonate with me, and I tend to be holding on to weight, too.
So now there's a real interesting thing. You see? So holding on to water, in effect, kind of reflects that you don't belong to anything, and it's a way of keeping yourself connected. So here's the thing we got to do. We got to get you to feel connected in some way. You need a connection. You need to start feeling a connection so you could let go of the extra weight on your shoulders. I'm not talking about fat. I'm talking about the weight of the world on your shoulders because you are so alone. So
yes.
I'm going to give you a remedy.
Okay.
Believe it or not.
Well, I'm here.
Okay, here's a thing to do. Here's a thing that's open. I like getting among crowds that have a single focus. Mm-hmm. Personally, I like... AA meetings, Al-Anon meetings, Overeaters Anonymous meetings. I like them because, not because of what they do, not because of the discipline, because of a feeling of being part of a group.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a valuable thing, the sense of being in a group and finally feeling like part of it. For you also, I would recommend, if possible, a psychotherapy with someone who you really trusted.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that?
I did once. She was a nice woman, but it was nowhere. It went nowhere, which made me get down on it.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Going nowhere is not the idea. Feeling something where you feel a connection is really important. And group therapy is great.
Is it?
Yeah, group therapy is great because that's where you start. You see, it's you're trying to get connected.
Yeah.
You're trying to feel the feeling of connection before you get it with another human. You got to try to see what it's like to be a piece of the world, and it's available to you because I can feel how open your heart is.
Oh, yeah, you drive me nuts with how intuitive you are. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's wonderful.
I like to drive people nuts
in the most wonderful way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen myself even stay in stupid jobs, but because I felt a sense of connection and
That's right.
family.
That's right.
And I do need that, and I've so desperately wanted it.
So good. So here's the way to get it. I mean, it's actually open to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Overeaters Anonymous.
Yeah.
Who cares about the program? You know, you go in there and you get these feeling of being with people. Volunteer work is great also. To volunteer, to work somewhere, to work with people and volunteer your time. Just any way you could be where you become part of a connection. You know?
Yeah, I'm with you.
I also recommend, you know what I also recommend to you, just because I'm hearing it? I would recommend at some point to consult with Roberta Atti, who I think is a real specialist in dealing with just the stuff that you're talking about.
I had thought about that.
Not a bad idea.
Great idea.
Yeah. Okay, so nice to talk to you. You're at least connected to me.
Yeah, and lots of blessings and gratitude, and thank you for the connection.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900. You think about WBAI, you know? Part about this station is this, miserable infighting group of people sometimes who are just, over the years, like in every program and every station everywhere, you can hear people talking against each other and talking about it. But WBAI, a community-based station, which is very interesting because the word is community, they're amazing in how much they, as a hub, reach out to people in this world who feel connected to each other. You have such a connection through this station. That's why this station has to be supported. That's why you got to back it up. That's why this station must stay on the air, and they must stay here, because they are the hub of a connection. And I think that makes a difference. A lot of you listening right now will be talking about driving around in your cars, or you'll put on WBAI and you'll listen to the program. Sometimes you don't even hear what's being said, but you feel like you're with a family. 99.5 FM on your air. It really is a pretty phenomenal thing that we present, and I love being a part of it. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille and family, The Positive Mind. Are you there?
Yes, Armand. How are you?
I'm great.
I love you.
Thank you.
I've listened to you for years, and this is the first time I'm picking up the phone and calling
great.
You.
Oh, great. What's your name?
My name is Penina.
Penina?
Yes.
Penina.
Uh-huh.
Is it with a P or a T?
P, like Peter.
Penina.
Yes.
Hello, Penina.
And Nina with a P in front.
Uh-huh.
Armand, I am being risky now. I've told you my name, and I'm going to tell you, and I think people recognize me.
Oh.
But I feel I am in so much pain because I feel I've lost my connectedness in my community to my synagogue and my rabbi, because something happened. And instead of talking to me first, he went and discussed it with others and just sort of tried in attempt to ostracize us from the community.
You mean something happened, and rather than talk to you about it, they
yes.
talked away from you.
Yes.
And they talked around you to try to get you ostracized from that immediate community because they thought something. What did they think about you? What were they
let me tell you. Some kids went into the synagogue. and they were found there the next morning. And in talking to the kids, I guess one of the parents said, oh, they were coming from this person's house, and they were having parties, and it wasn't true. I was at home. My child wasn't having parties. I was at home.
Uh-huh.
And instead of discussing with me, he called her school, and made some comments that I don't want to go into. But because of that, I feel I can't go back there.
I understand. Did you ever confront him on this? Did you ever talk to him about it?
I spoke to him, but after he had spoken to me, he went and did further damage. He said, oh, okay, but now, and he started giving, very conservative advice, and then he went further with it and did more damage. After I thought
funny.
He had apologized to me, he still went on and did more damage,
Panina. So, Panina, look at the gift that God has given you. Look at this gift. This gift of knowing that you are part of a community where the head of this community functions without integrity. Now, of all people to function without integrity, you don't want your rabbi to not have integrity.
Yeah.
So you are given the gift of being given the vision of seeing and being able to see this is not right.
Mm.
Now, I know how painful it is to be ostracized, to be out of that community,
mm-hmm.
to be on the outside of it, but in a way, everybody who's left behind is part of a fraud.
Yeah.
Can you find another?
It's so difficult. I look at it. I get up and I get dressed and I just can't make my way into another synagogue. I haven't healed this hurt yet to go and start a new relationship.
You don't have to heal the hurt. You don't have to heal it. You can take the pain into the new synagogue because that's where it belongs. You see, the pain is going to be healed by you connecting in a different kind of way. You don't have to wait till it's healed. But let me ask you something. When you were a kid, were you ostracized as a kid also?
I feel many times, yeah.
Yeah. And as a child, why did people ostracize you the most?
Because of my parentage. What I perceive. I was what they call, quote-unquote, illegitimate, And I was where I wasn't wanted a lot.
So you see this.
My father's home with the wife,
You see this feeling of being out in the cold, mm-hmm. and you desperately search to find a thing you belong to,
mm-hmm.
and then that thing is pulled away from you. It's so familiar that the pain of the present, which is, according to your story, the betrayal of your trust by a leader of a religious community. If that is true, then you're better off not there. But you crippled because it brings you all the way back to childhood when you felt this powerless feeling.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yes, absolutely.
You should be angry.
I was furious.
That's an appropriate feeling. Mm-hmm. See? The anger is appropriate. The depression is where you're turning it against yourself. So the depression is you not willing to find something new. So let me say to you, Panina, terrific. I understand completely, especially in some of those communities that you're talking about, how difficult it is to be ostracized.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's such a cultural thing that if you're ostracized, you're dead.
Yeah.
But don't believe it, because clearly you are not dead.
Thank you, Amma.
Clearly, in a way, they've lost a great thing by losing you.
Ah, it hurts so badly.
Yeah, I know. I can hear.
It hurts so bad. And at this time, too, High Holy Days, where, I need my friends, my synagogue, it's just so bad. I've been in my house today. It's the seventh day. I haven't gone out.
Uh-huh. And you have no friends from that community who are with you?
I have a friend, somebody I'm really, really close with. I have people who, casual congregants, we say hello and so on and so forth. But in that synagogue where I found, it was comfortable for years. I've been going there and been a member. And, I'm a different looking Jew, let's put it that way.
Sure.
Okay. I'm from the Caribbean. And, so I finally found my little niche, and I was comfortable. The rabbi never invited me to his house for lunch. You know, he would invite other people while they were talking to me. But still, that's where I felt. I found my corner where I prayed. And
right.
I
you see, but you're one of these people who accept meager offerings. I mean, how could you have somebody else invited to lunch in front of you while you're in a conversation? That's somebody who doesn't have the respect and the love that you deserve and need as part of your life. Mm-hmm. You go find a better place for yourself.
Okay.
You go find
it,
Penina. And if it's not just in a synagogue, I don't care if you volunteer your time to become part of at least an honest community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, Armand. Thank you so very much. I love you, and I'm so grateful that you're there.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. One more call time for... Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Let me turn off the radio.
Sure.
Armand, I came to see you during the summer to ask you a question, and I think it's pertinent to the something you're talking about today. You had a caller that was talking about her guy turned nasty on her, and that kind of ended the relationship. All the people I know that turned nasty, including myself, ended up on either Lexapro or Effexor or Prozac or some quick fix because they couldn't find any way to control their irritability, their hyper-reactiveness. And the question I really wanted to ask you was, how does a person who's numbing out their irritability make their way back to deciding whether they can present themselves to people as what they really are or continue to present themselves to people as someone who has to be medicated?
I hear what you're saying, and I understand exactly who you are. And I know that question. It is such a potent question. Because here's the problem. Here's the problem. When you're filled with this kremius, you know, when you're filled with this stuff inside you that's such an agitant, you know, you say to yourself, I don't want to be on drugs. I don't want to be medicated. I don't want to be a medicated self. I don't want to be a Lexapro guy. I want to be a feeling guy. But then when I get off the drugs, I am a kind of a slightly rageful, angry guy, and I don't know what to do. I want to try to find a balance in between. Yours is a purgatory. It is a place in the middle that is unbearable and difficult. But there is something about you that always gets to me when I hear you, you know? There is something about your integrity that is always in place. I say to myself, and I remember this when I met you, I was so proud of you for being, knowing who you were on such a level. And I said to myself, it's going to be a long road for this man.
Yes.
But he's going to find that place inside him where he belongs. He's going to find it. It's going to take him time. But he's going to find it, and it's not going to be with medication. But it's going to take you time.
Well, you know, recently, Armand, over the past couple of days, you've been reviewing techniques for making the mind still.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've been trying for many years all the techniques, breath control, meditation, all those things. One of the problems is that if you want that to work on a realistic level, one would have to be doing that one of those techniques 16 hours a day.
At the beginning, I'm not so sure about that. Everybody is different. It may be true for you to have to do it 16 hours a day, but, you know, maybe there's a simpler shortcut. Maybe hypnosis works a little better. Maybe something could be there in the suggestion that would actually get you to it a little sooner. You know, everybody needs their own prescription. Give me a call again. Let me look at it again with you, okay?
All right.
I'm on your team. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I am just running out of time right now. Sorry I'm running a little late, Michael. It is, if you want a copy of today's program, you would call 212 212-757-4488. That's the same about the, if you wanted to read information about the refugee syndrome, same number. 212-757-4488. Look at my website, friends. It's thepositivemind.com if you haven't been there. And I want to talk to my friends in Turkey who are listening. And I want to say special thanks to you and the friends in Ohio and friends out there on the West Coast who are sending me music. If you got music you love, send it to me, friends. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. We'll be talking about anger and anger management. Bye-bye for now.
Little more Regina Carter this afternoon, courtesy of our